So this afternoon I'm in a very warm Bristol with David Hoyle, who is the Dean of Bristol Cathedral. So thank you very much for having a cup of tea with me.
It's a treat.
So the first question I need to ask everybody is, where did we first meet?
I had advance notice of this and I still can't remember. I know I did an MDR for you, but that was I've been Dean for 8 years, and I think I met you probably at a diocesan service within the first year or so. The first time I remember a lengthy conversation with you was in your MDR, and that was probably about 6 years ago.
Yes, yeah. I think it might have been 2013, actually, that conversation.
So that's 5 years ago.
Might have been 2012, that sort of time. Do you drink tea, is the next standard question.
Occasionally. I'm not a great tea drinker.
So, the answer to what is your favourite sort of tea is coffee, then, presumably.
Yes, although when I do drink tea, I tend to drink Lapsang Souchong.
Have there been times when you've had to drink a cup of tea out of politeness?
I've been a curate and a parish priest. I have done my fair share.
I've had various descriptions of tea in those circumstances shared with me of people in Africa, for example, Elizabeth Harper, who's now in Wales doing, she seems to be doing everything, lay ministry training and all those sorts of things, described a particularly difficult cup of tea in Africa, and she doesn't drink tea or coffee.
Right. I did my curacy on a rather various housing estate, bits of which were pretty depressing, and also did an extended placement in a rather beaten up bit of London. There were times when you didn't look too closely at the crockery, times also when you actually didn't want to sit on any of the furniture, but you just got on with it.
Yes. Yeah, I think there have been places like that for all of us, really. The question I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I really don't think it's sleeping at the moment. I think it has a problem, but I don't think it's sleepiness that's the problem. I think it's got rather frantic and anxious. As I said, you sent the questions in advance. I was turning that over in my head. We've got this narrative suddenly. A number of bishops are running with it, and others, that we have 7 years or thereabouts to save the Church of England. It was 10 years, but the clock has been ticking. And we have become, as a consequence, very activist. There are diocesan conversations pretty well across the Church of England and elsewhere about strategies and outcomes. We're very focused on some very particular things. We're very interested, it seems to me, rightly, in mission and growth. Clearly those things matter, but very eager to tell our story. We've become very talkative. We feel as though we need to grab the world by the scruff of the neck. So it doesn't feel sleepy to me. It feels anxious. I do think quite often we sound as though we're talking to ourselves. And it does seem to me that occasionally we don't sound as though we're talking about some of the things that really matter. But I think it'd be very hard to look at the Diocese of Bristol and say that Christianity was sleeping. I think lots of people managed to ignore it, and that's a separate issue.
And you're certainly not in the dying camp, then?
There are seasons for... I'm a church historian. There are seasons for these things. We are not doing... we're not doing ourselves a great service. We're not doing the nation much of a service, I don't think. And I think we're off an awful lot of people's radar. But no, I don't think we're dying. We're clearly not dying across the world. And what it would be very interesting to see where we are in 40, 50 years' time. I don't think we're dying. I do think it feels very different even from when I began in ministry in 86.
I think it feels very different from when I started in Box 10 years ago.
Right.
Actually, which surprises me because that's quite a short time.
It is quite a short time. Yes, I think we have changed in quite short order. as I say, I think some of that's about anxiety, and I think some of it has to... One of the things that's prompted is a bit of a tendency for us all to shoot off in different directions. So we're more various than we were, which is quite interesting, but it's much more difficult for us to hold any kind of common thread, common narrative. I don't know what Box feels like. For 7-8 years I was director of ministry in Gloucester Diocese, where an awful lot of our parishes would not have been very dissimilar from places like Box. And it struck me that people in that kind of ministry were A, much more isolated than they had been. B, were living in communities which didn't function in the way those communities would have done 30 years ago. With a lot more movement and with people having a frame of reference that extended way beyond the village, which makes the job more complicated. Just a different relationship to diocese and to liturgy. So do you think we're sleeping at the moment?
I don't know. This isn't my statement. This is a statement from Tim Stanley, and he wrote it in the Telegraph about 18 months ago.
Right.
And I didn't know what I thought about it. So that's one of the kind of flags for the quest. I think it's very different. I mean, I was interested. 30 years ago, 3 different men did my job.
Hmm.
So I'm obviously going to be doing that in quite a different way.
You are, yeah.
So, yes, and some things like technology make that easier, and some things like different expectations and the various expectations of people make it harder. So that's quite a challenge, I think.
I have a book on my shelves. I think it's written by Hensley Henson, and it's a study of the Church of England. And the picture on the cover says more about the book than the book itself does, really. The picture on the cover is a man with a scythe in a field, clearly cutting wheat or something. And there's a church spire in the background, but this guy is clearly an agricultural labourer. And standing next to him, and clearly engaging in some sort of conversation, is the parish priest, who has a big right round collar and a hat. and there's something cultural there about the way class landed for the church in villages, which would no longer be true. There's something about relationship. That vicar would have known who that person was. Much more difficult for you to know who the people are who live in your 3 communities. And there are places, I can't remember how many it was I counted, getting on for 20 in 20 parishes in one of the announcements in the Church Times last week. So our relationship with place has altered. And the work of a dean is, quite clearly my predecessors wrote books in the morning, did a bit of gentle ambling in a procession in the afternoon, and then retired home for sherry. My life is not like that.
I've given you 3 difficult questions as your personal questions. Do you think the slave trade still hangs as a shadow over Bristol as a city?
Without a shadow of a doubt. Oddly enough, I was at a city conversation last night where we were exploring this issue. A lot of people deny it. You know, it's done and dusted. It was 200 years ago, all that kind of stuff. And it's taken me some time to understand precisely what it is we are talking about. Very simply, partially because we just don't tell the story right. So Christians particularly are guilty of this because of our idolisation of people like Wilberforce. We have a slight tendency to tell a story in which we emancipated the slaves, didn't we do well? As opposed to we enslave people and then rather late in the day we realised we shouldn't do it. So there's there's something about the kind of history we work with in which we exonerate ourselves of blame. There's also, certainly in this city, there is very, very clear evidence that the black communities are still massively disadvantaged. The Runnymede Trust last year did a report and identified Bristol as the most divided of the major cities. In this city, BAME people, particularly people out of African or Caribbean descent, are least likely to get into higher education in a city which has two major universities. That has something to do with the transatlantic slave trade, and a lot more besides. But yes, it's a very big issue.
Do you think we should be doing more about it? Do you have an idea of one single thing or a few things we could do which would help?
I think there are lots of things we can do. My immediate responsibility is, as someone who has, amongst other things, a heritage building, is to tackle the heritage bit of that. So I need to make sure that whilst we're unlikely to take out a window that says in memory of Edward Colston, because you don't edit your history in that way, what I do need to notice is that I have been editing my history in another way and not talking about the victims of transatlantic slavery or the way communities have overcome what they suffered. So the immediate issue for me is to tell a much more balanced story about the city, about the Church of England's complicity in slavery, and about what we are doing now. I had a slight tendency to think, let's suppose modern forms of slavery, that addresses the issue. It doesn't address the legacy of transatlantic slavery. There are things the city should be doing, particularly about access to higher education.
What's the best thing about being dean of a cathedral?
The thing that I enjoy most, the kind of the stimulus that comes with the job, is that very interesting and very different groups of people assemble here from time to time. So, for example, not all that long ago, we had a Commonwealth service. Because I'm the dean, I get to preach, and I had to sit down and think, what do I think about the Commonwealth? What does Scripture tell me about things like the Commonwealth? What does the tradition tell me about things like that? So I get an opportunity to reflect and speak into the community, and I love that. And it's often stuff that I've just not encountered before. Alongside that, it's quite different, but actually this is collegiate, and quite often when I go to a service, I can just sit there and I can be carried along. If I'm honest, bits of the job are quite stressful, and you can feel quite isolated in quite difficult circumstances, but equally there are other points where I am just carried along by the place, and I like that.
Good. If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
I think I ought to say, given where we started, that I'd like it to be a bit less anxious and a bit more confident and remember that we've been around for a long time, and that we're going to take an awful lot of killing. I think one feature of our anxiety, and actually a broader feature of conversation at the moment, I don't know if you bump into this, I get slightly weary of people who want to tell me that they are passionate about something, or that the answer to this is absolutely clear and obvious. So I think we are dealing with quite a lot of overblown rhetoric and quite a lot of fundamentalism of different kinds. Fundamentalism of text, fundamentalism of my experience, anti-Christian fundamentalisms as well. I was a student in the 70s. I was ordained in 86. When I began my ministry, and then as a college chaplain, I lived with an awful lot of questions an awful lot of the time. I do wish we could do that rather more, and be a bit less insistent, and wrestle with the kind of spiritualities that I think a lot of people have, where they're still struggling to name things.
That's really interesting. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I know I have an Archbishop for the Day answer, which is take all the pews out of everywhere, issue the edict, and then everyone would have to do it and then blame me, but I'd only been Archbishop for a day, so that would be fine.
And that would change things because?
Because it would free up people's space, and it would solve the argument for people that have been arguing about it for the past 30 years or mulling it over for the past 30 years. And I think in rural places, it would make the spaces back to what they were before, community
yes,
spaces.
They would.
And I think that would help people see the church in a more seated way in the community, perhaps even in a more of a way of a tabernacle, of something right there with them in the community.
Because a lot of your pews are quite late intrusions, and they were also quite often about ownership. So they are problematic, and I'm well aware of that. I'm just conscious in the cathedral, one of the things we do particularly here is we provide a kind of space for people. We have a lot of fellow travellers. We have a lot of people who sit in the nave during Evensong. Some of them actually do that pretty regularly. And they want to be in the place, and they want to have a place in it. I'm located here. This is my seat here. They don't want to be required to belong or pressed onto a rota, or even necessarily shaken by the hand. So actually, whilst I wouldn't argue with you, because I think you are doing something very different in a parish church, particularly in somewhere like Box, than I am doing in the middle of a city in a cathedral, I think the business of having places where people can sit and feel a bit secure is actually quite important.
I'm not saying we wouldn't necessarily have any seats.
No, I know that.
I think because I worked in Wellington, in St John's, and they hadn't had pews for 20 years by the time I got there because right. They'd rotted away. But I was the first person who ever suggested moving the chairs for a service.
Despite the fact that it could so easily have been done. Yeah.
Yes. So that was... I think it would help the communities reclaim the space.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, we have chairs anyway, so we can actually move them out, and we do.
So our last question is always this one, and it's often the one that people struggle with. So what is your favourite thing that begins with T?
Well, I actually have a theological answer for you, because I have a daughter who's forever asking me, what's my favourite book, what's my favourite film? And the theological answer, it's actually back to the business about being passionate about something. God created everything and intended us... And took delight in everything, intends us to do the same. So I don't have a favourite thing that begins with tea, because I like Chateau Talbot, and I like Tattinger, and I like toast and tiramisu, and I like places like Tarbert and Tobenden near where I grew up, and I could go on. I wrote out quite a long list of teas, and actually that's quite important. If we become, I'm not suggesting you're trying to get us to do this, but if we become the people who are too narrowly passionate or who can only take a delight in one film or one book. And that's really not what my daughter's up to either. But I'm kind of a bit resistant to wanting to focus down too narrowly. It's a bit of this and a bit of that.
Most people have found it hard to try and choose one thing with tea. That's quite interesting, actually. I should go away and mull that over.
Well, I think it's a theological point.
Yes. Although somebody did say theology, so I wonder if that is a multifarious thing.
I've spent an awful lot of my life doing theology now. I have a doctorate in it, and I write it, and I preach it, I think we're supposed to take delight in all things.
Thank you very much for having a cup of tea with me today.
Not at all. What a treat.